listening to MicroSpy, a podcast that takes a closer look at the lives and work of musicians and creatives I admire. My name is Eric Ratzenberger. In this episode, I speak with Alex Edkins, the guitarist and vocalist of the band Metz, and his new brainchild, Weird Nightmare. Alex and I discuss his music as a coping mechanism, the shift in mindset regarding creative collaboration, and the magical effects music and art can have on humanity. His new project, Weird Nightmare, released its debut full-length on Sub Pop last year. Metz's most recent album, Atlas Vending, also released on Sub Pop, came out in 2020. He's already working on new material for both. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Alex Edkins of Metz and Weird Nightmare. Talking about reflecting on the first month of 2023, it's now January 31st. Crazy that we're a month into the new year already. Tell me a little bit about how it's been for you.
It's been good. I feel fortunate to be able to stay really, really busy with the things I love, you know, making as much music as possible. And, you know, I was trying to make sense of how I do that and why I do that. And I think it is a bit of a coping mechanism on my side to just have my days full of projects and things and music and bands and stuff to I don't know if it's like sheltering myself from the outside world, but I also think it might be a little bit of that, you know. I can't get too down on things if I'm just like really, really focused on staying positive and doing the things that I love. So, that's a long-winded way of saying things are going well. I feel good and I feel fortunate.
Well, it sounds like there's a level of full immersion, basically. And I was going to ask you this later in the conversation, but I like how we are hitting the ground running here in terms of your relationship with creating. I think it totally makes sense that you're almost defaulting to it as a coping mechanism, especially with how things are now. I mean, it's weird. It's like, I don't want to even call it a post-pandemic world. I mean, it's still a fucked up environment and landscape that we're all trying to operate within, right? So it's like, even though, you're playing shows, you've been touring here and there. I mean, I was going to ask about how the Weird Nightmare tour went with Archers of Loaf, which was, I think, just a week or two ago, right?
Right.
How did that feel for you in terms of just getting back out on the road, playing these new songs, playing with a legendary band? Like, would you say that might have been one of the highlights of the month?
Oh, I mean, for sure. I was over the moon when we got offered those shows, and because we go a ways back with Archers and Eric, and because they put Metz on a bunch of their bills like 10 years ago, so it's like they're friends and we absolutely look up to them and love the music they've made. And yeah, it's funny, the pandemic just ripped away this thing we were so accustomed to doing, and you're just left with this void. And then now that we're back, you can so easily it just feels normal again. It's kind of, I mean, obviously it's not the same, but you can forget that it happened. Like when you're in that moment and when you're at a show, it's like, ah, here we are. We're doing the thing that we love to do and that we've done for so long. And I mean, I guess that's a positive thing, but you can get, you know, snap back into reality pretty quick.
I think a lot of the press around Weird Nightmare, which is, I guess you can call it a new project. I mean, the record was just released last year on Sub Pop, but I've read that this has been kind of a culmination of songs over the years, some dating back as early as 2013, right? I mean, you're talking about the pandemic, and this is sort of a time when you kind of decided to just put your head down and actually make this thing. Can you tell me about that headspace that you were in when you decided that the pandemic was the time to start working on an album like this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the name of the project totally speaks for itself. You know, it was this feeling of like, what the hell's going on? And what am I supposed to do? You know, Metz is a touring band, and now we don't even know if this is going to be possible going forward, like at all. We were just, you know, in a state of shock. And I've talked about this before, but the weird nightmare thing was like, Metz rents this space, and it's this huge warehouse, and it's full of little rooms, and they're usually full of bands making all kinds of, you know, there's a reggae band down the hall, there's a metal band down the other way, and it's usually this crazy sound, this thing. And then I was the only one going in there, and I'd go in there because we were being told to not leave our house, right? And I couldn't stay home, so I'd go at night and work on this thing. And it was just the most bizarre end of the world feeling that I've ever experienced. Just this empty warehouse, not a peep, and I'm just walking down these corridors being like, what? You know, like the last one on earth. And so that influenced the name. But then the project couldn't have been, you know, more different than the vibe. It was like this thing I wanted to flip it, you know.
Oh, totally. I mean, that's kind of the irony of it. You know, you would think that being in a pandemic or being in the middle of a pandemic and this kind of post-apocalyptic feeling that you're the sound of anything you create would almost go to a more, you know, aggressive or darker vibe. Whereas Weird Nightmare, it's almost like a light at the end of the tunnel or something, not to sound cheesy, but you know, you put it on and the first few seconds you kind of just have this feeling of like, all right, let's get up and go. Let's do this.
Absolutely. You know? I wanted to put a smile on people's faces to be on, like, I know that sounds insane. It sounds kind of
no, but it's funny because it's almost like you had a calling or something, or you're like, fuck this, I'm just gonna do this now. Like, yeah, we might be in a world of unknowns, but it's almost like you double down on your inclination to bring this thing to fruition.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it was like, I think I needed to make myself feel happy as well. Yeah. But you know, because at the end of the day, I think most people who are making music in the way Metz does and you know underground music, for lack of a better term, or like punk music or whatever, you're doing it for yourself and maybe your community, you know, maybe the people that can relate and have come up with it in that scene or whatever. So there was still that, but I also just felt the need to not dwell on the negative. It wasn't a lot of thinking that went into it. It was automatic. It was just like instinctual and kind of happened. And I did not fight it. I've absolutely in the past fought off some of my inclinations. And this time I was like, nope, I'm just going to say yes. I'm just going to follow it. And I'm really glad I did. It was just like this set of circumstances that led me that way. And, you know, here we are.
Listening to a record like this that basically was inspired to bring to light through a pandemic, which is probably, like, you know, the darkest times that we've been living in, you know, just as humanity, you know, I mean, at least in our time, it's just, I think it really put a damper on a lot of people's inclination to create. I think people's trajectories were obviously hugely altered. I mean, I started this podcast in 2019, and I had done, I think, about 11 episodes before the pandemic came about, and I just lost all motivation to do anything, really. I mean, that initial shock of the shutdowns and the unknowns and just the constant updates of this, the governments, and like just reading the news about just how this thing was just spreading worldwide. And as a musician, as an artist, I mean, I can only imagine how many other people were affected in terms of what kind of headspace they were in before it came about, and then how people had to adapt in those moments of unknowns, right? So I think it was kind of cool where you paint a really, you know, vivid picture of like walking down the corridors where there's just no one around, but you have this group of songs that you just felt like you needed to bring to life. That's kind of a cool thing in terms of what this time and era that we're in has kind of spawned, like this completely new and fresh feeling thing. I mean, how did the headspace differ besides doing this during a pandemic? And that's what I was about to say earlier, you know, in terms of all the press and all the interviews that I've read, you know, how it's been kind of framed as this album that's been made during a pandemic. And what was the headspace, and how did it differ from your writing modes when you're doing work with Metz?
Well, it's funny. It's similar. The approach is similar. It's like I'll sit down and with a drum machine or something and just get going, just start recording until you fluke on something that you like. But for this one, there was a little bit more of this, like there's no expectations. There's no one that I need to show it to or work with. It was like this no rules thing. And it was a freeing feeling. And it was, you know, I didn't know if anyone would ever hear it. So it, like I said, at the very beginning, it was this idea of, well, I might as well do something. That being said, I was just like everyone else. Like at the beginning, I was, you know, kicking back and watching too much TV and trying to, well, this won't last forever. There's no way. And then when we settled into like, I don't know what month it was, and I was like, okay, I need to do something. And we had just, this is the thing, right? We had just finished Atlas Vending. And so I don't know about you, and I don't know about other people, but after you do a huge project like that, and that was like something that we were immensely proud of and like felt like that was the best thing we could have made at the time. You need like a breather. Like I was incapable at that time of jumping back in and trying to write more Metz material. Like you just need that space. And so it couldn't have been, I just wasn't going to work that way. It's always been where I need a little bit of space afterwards.
And when the pandemic came, did you have space from the guys as well? Like was everyone just kind of going in their own corners and just figuring stuff out with their families and like just kind of holding on until there was some sort of indicator of where things were going to go?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were all told to not leave the house. Right. And, I remember it mostly, because when it all hit, it was, I think it was March, right? And we were on the road opening for Refused, and we were on the West Coast, and we started to like realize, oh, this is really getting crazy, and this is serious, and there's not going to be any shows after this. Like we were sort of getting to that point, like getting to that understanding. Like, so we finished that tour and we got home. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I saw the guys for weeks, you know?
Crazy.
Yeah.
I saw that you guys did, a KEXP, performance in the rehearsal space. Is that correct?
So that's a local studio, called Palace Sound that we don't, man, I wish we rehearsed there.
So I was gonna be like, that's a pretty tight space.
It's a beautiful spot. Yeah, no, yeah, we have a little closet rehearsal spot that's just garbage.
Oh yeah,
garbage,
don't we all?
Yeah.
Well, either way, that performance was sick. Remind me of when that actually took place and how you guys kind of came to that moment where it's like, okay, because I know you've done a couple press things remotely, and I really applaud that, where like you just tried to keep some semblance of normalcy or maybe even just trajectory or, you know, momentum. Because I know that I saw that you did the Amoeba What's in My Bag, and then that KEXP performance, and probably a slew of others. But at that point, I mean, how did it feel for everyone to get back together in a room and to prepare for that while this thing was still happening? Yeah. Because that was kind of in the heart of the pandemic still, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was, again, that's like survival instincts. I think all three of us have that, like, you know, what is it? Inertia or something. You can't stop.
A lot of inertia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we were forced to stop, and then, okay, we had these huge plans for our record, right? You know, and you're mapping those out like a year in advance, and they all mm-hmm. got thrown to the side, you know, just like everyone else. But so how do we postponed the release of our album for as long as we could without going crazy. And then we eventually did release it during the pandemic, and, you know, doing the KXP thing and Amoeba. And we also did the Live at the Opera House album too. And these were all just ways for us to still feel like a band when we were forced not to be a band, you know?
Like you said at the top of the conversation, it's almost like it's a default coping mechanism. You know, it's like like you said, everyone in the band feels that they need to do something, no matter what, no matter how. Clearly, you know, Atlas Vending, this record you're insanely proud of, all of these plans surrounding it, only to be kind of like the rug being pulled out from you and everyone else who had all these plans to get out there to tour, to share their work, and then suddenly everything is altered. It's just like a head fuck, you know?
Oh, huge. And we absolutely depend on that give and take of sharing, you know, going out on the road and sharing what we've made with people and getting that reciprocal feel and the energy from people. And it was absolutely bizarre not to have that. And I mean, it's hard to explain. It's hard to describe to people who aren't kind of in those shoes where you're, you know, dreaming up something or making something and then putting it out into the world, and not having that normal way of kind of gauging its effectiveness or something like that. You know, there was no, we were like, huh, like there it goes. Chris said, it's like we took the record and threw it in a river and just watched it go downstream. Like, you know,
oh my God.
And I can totally relate to that. It was just this feeling that we'd never felt before. It felt like we weren't able to do right by the album or something like that in the way that we're used to. But, you know, we're creatures of habit, you know, so it was just a forced change.
It must feel like there is some major unfinished business. It's warped time in a lot of ways. Because again, you know, it's like you guys having this record that you worked so hard on and that you were just so ready, like you said, to share it with people, and the kind of, there is that kind of reciprocity between, you know, the artist and then sharing it with people and then getting the feedback or playing the show where people are just, you know, freaking out or it's like when those things are taken away at such a point in your career, it's like, okay, how do we get back to that as soon as possible? Only to acknowledge at the same time that, you know, it's just not ever going to be the same, I think, which is also weird. And, you know, I'm pulling from what you're saying about when you are in those moments of performance, or you actually do, you know, a run of shows, and you have like that very small slice of time where you almost forget.
Yeah.
And everyone in the crowd also forgets, which is kind of a beautiful thing. I mean, that's kind of like the whole point of live music anyways, for you to go through the door and just listen to your favorite band and just like lose your shit, right? But it almost like has a different meaning these days, because there's like this collective consciousness of the pandemic just kind of overhanging and just being in the room at all times.
Yeah, if anything, it's made the importance of live music more clear. Like to me, it was...
Totally.
It was like this oh, you know, I always did this thing. I never questioned why I did it. I just did it. It was just like, I was like, I love it. So I'll play in bands and I'll... And then the pandemic like allowed you to have a really clear focus on what it was offering, like what it was bringing to my life, what it was doing for my health and my social circle, my friends, my, you know, it's this integral part of like kind of my ecosystem or whatever. And, so that was eye-opening, you know, because I think you can absolutely, like anything else, take it for granted. And then I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, no, this is, you know. And so, you know, I just turned 42, and that's another thing where as you get older, you go, why am I doing this? You know, what's making me do this? And I can now, I think, understand it in a way that it's like what I was mentioning before is that it is like doing something very important for my mind and my kind of soul, if you will, that when taken away, you almost don't feel like yourself.
I can totally relate to that. I'm 43, so we're basically the same age, but I've kind of come to those questions myself about why am I still doing this? Why do I still feel compelled to create? Why do I still feel compelled to be involved in punk and like hardcore? And, you know, like you said, the pandemic has kind of brought a sharper focus to just how integral it is to your well-being and your social circles and your, basically you realize how much of a direct connection it is to your identity as a person. Mm-hmm. And when that gets ripped away from you, you don't feel whole. You feel a bit askew and just like off kilter. And yeah, like you said, you know, you guys are creatures of habit, right? And I think just having such a long career and have been doing this for, what is it now? Almost 15 years, right?
Yeah.
It's been a minute and nonstop, mind you. So when that suddenly gets shifted by circumstances out of your control, it's like, what the fuck? But then in the same breath, it's like, you realize more than ever, just as you did when you were going in the space working on the Weird Nightmare album, it's like you have to do this no matter what.
Yeah, and now I look at that as like an absolute godsend. I go, oh my god.
Yeah.
So it's funny how this stuff works. I mean, just in my scenario, I'm not trying to paint it too, you know, too much silver lining here, but for me,
sure,
it was this thing I felt compelled to do that has now turned into an actual record, and you know, I get to tour with Archers of Loaf, and go do that, and I'm smack in the middle of making a new Weird Nightmare record, so it's like it's turned into a thing that I never thought it would. So
I love that.
Yeah, that shitty situation was turned into something that I'm really like really excited about. So I mean, that's the only way that's the only way I want to look at that time in my life.
Well, it's cool because it also shows that you have full ability and capability to create new creative pathways that sort of expand your world as a musician and a creative and an artist. And I think that's what's really, it's so powerful, right? Because even though Weird Nightmare is just a direct extension of your creative tendencies, it's cool how here we are in 2023 and you just came off of a run with Archers, and like you said, you're smack in the middle of a new record. So it's like it suddenly became this extended arm of your existence. Mm-hmm. As a songwriter, as a musician.
That surely would not have happened because Metz would have been on the road, and I just would have said, I would have put on the back burner again. And so in that way, it's, I don't know, one of those serendipitous things, just one of those things that just worked out that way. But yeah, what can I say?
When you were making it, was Sub Pop aware that you had this kind of sort of brewing, you know, low key, or is this something that you made and you finished and you're like, hey guys, like, check it out. Like,
yeah, no one heard it, knew about it, or even Chris and Hayden didn't hear it.
Did they know that you were going in the studio on your own? Like, did they have any idea that you were still like grinding?
I think I had told them after a practice before I dove into it, before I was like, you know what? I got a bunch of old songs that, you know, were initially, you know, written to be Met songs that didn't happen. A couple of them at least. And then I think I'm going to finish those. And they were both like, cool. Yeah. Right on. Do that. You should do that.
Yeah.
And so they knew that I wanted to do that, but there was no communication really about it, because the whole time when I was making it, I was questioning, like, do I like this? Do I want this to be her? You know, it was more of like an exercise in will. I was like, and I was at a point where I'm going to say yes to everything. Like, I was just like, no more excuses. And I'm like, and you know, the MO of that record was to make it sugary and to make like the choruses, like, you know, the Tom Petty thing, like, don't bore us, get to the chorus. I wanted to have like a hooky thing every 30 seconds. I wanted, you know, just totally different than what I'm used to doing. And so during the making of it, I had all kinds of self-doubt. I was just like, you know, I don't know. And I kept pushing through, and at the end of it had the, I don't know, audacity, I guess, or the, I don't know what it was, but I was just feeling maybe overly confident. I sent it to the folks at Sub Pop, and they were, you know, Poneman, Jonathan, who's the owner, he was one of the first ones to get back to me. He was just like really excited about it. And, you know, that was just felt amazing. He's just like, I'm so glad you did this and that you made this and that you showed it to us. And yeah, but you know, that's another story. Like, I can go all day about how, you know, the folks at Sub Pop are just on another level as far as just being supportive. And, you know, they've had Metz's back in a really honest to goodness way, like, you know, letting us do our thing in a way that I don't think I'd never anticipated meeting people like that or getting to work with them.
It's cool to see that from afar, you know, because even though, you know, I don't know the inner workings of your relationship with them, it's very clear that there's a real synchronicity in terms of their support for what you guys are creating, their support for what you've created with Weird Nightmare. And I love how it's been a longstanding relationship. I mean, they've been there for you guys since 2012. I mean, so we're past 10 years of working together, right?
Yeah. And from what I can tell, I mean, that's not the usual relationship between a band and a label. It's like, I think it's pretty cutthroat in a lot of places. Like, if you don't hit the numbers, you're done, kind of thing. And that's what I was getting at, is that I feel like they believe in the three of us and what we're doing. And at least that's the vibe we get from them. So that feels pretty great.
It kind of speaks to what we were saying about putting stuff out there and then getting a response. And I think it's not much different when it's even with a label that you're working with, when they clearly get it and they see the vision and they see and feel the thing that it is that you're putting out there. it resonates with them to a point where they're going to just want to keep supporting what it is you're making as an artist. And I think that's very rare. And I think it's a really special relationship to have with, especially, you know, such a label. I mean, it's just rad to have them at your side. Mm-hmm. And for them to also support Weird Nightmare, which kind of came out of something totally unexpected. And they're like, no, this is great. Like, let's make an album.
Yeah. You know? And, you know, and it was recorded on a Focusrite in a closet. Like, it was like, you know, I got Seth to mix it. Seth Manchester, who mixed Atlas Fending, he mixed it, but my recordings were, you know, intentionally lo-fi and mm-hmm. blown out. Yeah. And that's because that's how I like it. But it's also, you know, I'm not a professional engineer. So it was a combination of like fumbling my way through it, but also having, you know, this love of distortion and things like sounding a certain way. But yeah, you know, yeah. I think a lot of people would have been like, well, cool, those are cool demos. Then let's talk about doing a proper album. But no, they're like, oh, no, right. I love it. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. So they got that as well. They understood that that was like an intentional choice.
Right. Like the capture right then and there is what it was supposed to be. And yeah. then, yeah. you know, to get it professionally mixed, just kind of probably gelled it all together. And then the result is this great record, which I've honestly been listening to quite a bit on repeat, especially these past couple of weeks, knowing that we were going to talk, but also just because I think it's a great album. And to be honest with you, I put it on when I go running and it it's just, you know, the sequencing of the album, the production of the album. I got to give you props for your songwriting, man. Like you know, you're an amazing songwriter. And I think this, I mean, the Metz albums are amazing, but of course Weird Nightmare's approach, it's a little bit different. Like you kind of, like you said, you want it to be more sugary, a little bit more poppy and all this stuff. It still has your signature sound, but in terms of songwriting, and I love that you mentioned Tom Petty, you know, Don't Bore Us, Get to the Chorus. There's an aspect of songwriting awareness, I guess, you know, in terms of your choices and how you structure these songs. I mean, I was going to ask you, where does that come from in terms of that awareness of songwriting? Like who are some of the musicians that you've kind of taken to over the years that has given you, I don't know, I don't want to say like the roadmap, but yeah. kind of influenced you to write the record you wrote?
I mean, I'm a record collector and used to spend, you know, way too much time and money on doing that. I've chilled it out recently since having a kid, but I don't know. I have a wide love of so many types of music, but I think this sort of embracing of traditional, if you will, or songwriting structures and things like that was a really fun experiment. And it was because Metz purposefully does like the opposite. I mean, in some ways, right. Compared to a lot of underground music, we're quite structured and quite traditional in Metz, but you know what I mean. Like, it's like, we're not,
totally.
It's not A, B, A, B, C,
mm-hmm.
all the time. Sometimes we go there and that seems slightly subversive to do in punk. But anyway, point being is like, I think I was leaning into the stuff that I grew up on, which is, you know, boring to say, but just, you know, British Invasion, Beatles, Kings.
Yeah.
That's like, I have such a love of that. And I guess it's, you know, it's stuff like that I was raised on. My folks weren't big music heads, but they still had the good stuff. Like it was the Beatles and the Stones and the Beach Boys and the Band. And so there's just that stuff was like ingrained at a young age. And then I went further with it with my record collecting mania. So it was that stuff had always been in my brain and stuff that I appreciated and really admired. And I just tapped into it a little bit for these songs.
Yeah, I love that. And it makes sense. I can see the correlation, but I love that it has, again, that very distinguishable feel to everything, you know, but it's almost like being in that frame of mind and referencing those types of bands, but applying it to your own, or applying songwriting in your own way to this kind of vibe that you've created. And I was gonna say, like, yeah, there is almost a feeling of nostalgia while listening to these songs. It's like, it's weird. It sounds both like current, but also gives me a feeling of nostalgia as well. And
It was like I said before, it's like this thing of trying to do it subconsciously, almost like trying not to think, and so things just sort of flood out. And I don't think I'm really capable of that. Like, that would be some sort of miracle if someone could actually do that, because we're all self-aware, but I tried to just not overthink the process, so I think there's a pretty interesting amount of Matt's and a pretty interesting amount of this new side of me that I guess it's an old side of me, really.
Couple tracks with some features. So you have Bully on one of them, and then is it Chad Vengal?
Van Galen.
Vengalen. How did that come about, and when did you arrive to thinking that you needed to reach out to them? Like, what's your relationship with those artists?
Well, they're friends and people I've met on the road, and people I just look up to and appreciate. And it came late in the process, just trying to be like, you know. For the song Wrecked that Alicia from Bully sings on,
Right.
it was very much like the last song that I was finishing up, and I was unsure of it and wasn't completely satisfied. Like, I was like, something's missing. I don't know if I like this. And with a lot of this stuff, it was just a gut feeling. It's not like I even thought of anyone else. It was just immediately, Alicia's voice would fit perfectly here. And thankfully, she was totally game, and like, you know, I think she sent it back in a couple days. Like, it was like,
Oh my God.
yeah, it was awesome. Like, totally perfect. And I chopped it up a little, but it was so easy, and she was really excited about it. So like, that just one of those, the whole process of the record was about sort of getting into your beyond your comfort zone. So me asking someone to, let alone like, listen to the song would be nerve-wracking, but also to have the nerve to say, do you want to be like on the track? I was just doing, I was, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I was doing all that kind of stuff, and just throwing caution to the wind. And same with Chad. He's a guy that I don't know how well he known he is in the world, but in Canada, he's just like, you know, really adored, and he's this kind of mad scientist type guy. And it was in that track, it was a spot where, like, traditionally you'd put a guitar solo, and I had done a little bit of a guitar solo thing, and I was like, eh, I don't know about that. And I sent it to him. I said, what do you think? Like, what do you want to put something in this spot? And he's like, yep. And he sent back a very Chad response musically. It was like, what did he use? He used like two instruments that I'd never heard of in my life. It was like the Chinese harp and something else, forgetting the name of, that they sound totally otherworldly, like in the context of a rock song. And, you know, just, I had to laugh. I was just like, that's the most Chad thing I've ever witnessed, is him sending a track of, like, I don't think many people in indie rock or whatever would even have those instruments, but he's a type of guy who's like, he made a drum machine from scratch, and he did, like, he's just one of these kind of guys. And it was a thrill to that he wanted to be a part of this project.
Amazing. I love that you had an existing relationship with them. It almost makes it all the sweeter to include friends on a project that became what it was. And that's awesome that they're both a part of it. This record also, to me, it almost feels like a soundtrack to an entire film. I feel like it could be like any song from the record, and you could put it, you know, for the opening scene of a movie, but also like the end credits of a movie, or the montage in the middle of the movie.
Let's get that word out there about this, because I would love for that to happen.
Well, it's yet to happen. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't see how it won't happen. I was gonna say, yeah. I mean, where is all the licensing? Because I think it's about to hit your future. But
what kind of movie are you picturing here?
I don't know. I feel like I just think of John Hughes or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Now we're talking.
but you know, speaking of movies and films, I know that you're also actually composing. I wanted to shift gears really quickly and just kind of touch on this aspect of your songwriting and your creativity. Let's talk about Edkins Walsh. Is that still happening? Are you guys still collaborating together?
We are, yeah.
Everyone about what that is, Edkins Walsh Music.
It is me and my friend, dear friend Graham Walsh, who's known from being a great producer and engineer, but also being in a band called Holy Fuck from Toronto. And he and I met while working on the first Mets record in 2011, and we've been close ever since. And we are kind of like studio rats, and you know, the place where we shot the KXP session with Mets, that Studio Palace is where we kind of hole up. Him and I will go in there with nothing planned and just create and try to make something that we both like. And that has turned into us doing some scoring for film. And also, I don't know if this is really known yet, but we've made a record together that is going to come out pretty soon under the name Noble Rot. So this is a band.
Oh, nice.
It's really a studio project with him and I, but yeah, it's been just another outlet to stay busy and have fun. Really. It's, his approach is really inspiring, and his kind of skill set is very different than mine. So I find that our mix, like when we get together, it's always kind of a surprise what comes out.
Is there kind of a routine that you have with the balance between family, Mets, Weird Nightmare, and your collaboration remind me of his name again?
Oh, Graham Walsh.
Graham, yeah. Right, with Graham. Like, you know, obviously it's so great to have so many outlets. How do you build it into your schedule? Or is there kind of a structure, or is it kind of just where the wind takes you type of thing?
It's honestly more random. Yeah, it's like it's when people are available. It's that kind of thing, you know. If you know, Mets is the most consistent and full-time project that I have, and then I work everything else around that. And yeah, it's worked out. It's a lot, but like I said when we first started talking, I'm not happy unless I have like maybe like debatably too many things on the go. That's kind of where I feel comfortable. If there's not enough things to look forward to or to work on and stuff, I get a little bit, antsy or something. So, it hasn't been, they obviously have to, there's a juggling act there and stuff, but, it works out.
How has it been, creating sort of a work-life balance between, being at home with, your kid and touring and all that? Like, how do you balance the sort of logistics of all that? How has it been over the years for you?
It's incredibly hard.
Yeah.
I think anyone would say the same. Like, if you're trying to be a good dad and a good husband and also be a touring musician, it's like, and a touring musician that can't, financially cannot, we cannot bring our kids with us or our families with us as some big bands do. So it's about, being away for long periods of time. And so it is really emotionally tough for everyone involved. And I don't think I would do it if it wasn't for my wife being supportive of that, like, the band's choice to do that. I can't paint it. It's not this dreamy thing. It's a lot. It's a lot of work. It's pretty grueling.
It's messy.
For everyone who knows, they know.
Very, very true. Being in 2023, and like kind of reflecting on a decade plus of doing all of this, where would you ideally want to see things go in terms of, what's ahead for Weird Nightmare? What's ahead for Metz? What's ahead for your composing career? Like, what's sort of your goal for this coming year?
It's a great question. I've never had a long-term plan. I believe deeply that if you put the work in and do your best, like put your best work forward and do it for the right reasons, that good things will happen. So far that's been true. I've never had career ambition like this or an end game. It's just been about doing the work, like doing and enjoying. When I say work, it makes it sound like it's a chore. It's not. It is the joy of it all, is to be able to spend time making music is like a gift. It's like an absolute privilege. And so if I can continue to do that, I feel like that's the success in it all, really.
That is probably a big reason why things are the way they are for you and for Metz, because it's really about the, like, and I said this earlier in the conversation, like this level of full immersion. There's no like long-term plan. It's more so about what you create and when it feels right to create it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's not to say that I think everyone wants their project to succeed or be heard by as many people as possible. And I'm no different. Like that's absolutely true in my case. Like I wish more people had heard, the last Metz record or whatever. I'm like, sure. Yeah. But, I don't think it hasn't so far, changed our way of approaching how to create and work together and stuff. Like, we've stayed pretty true to that, and for better or for worse. And I think it's about, I mean, I can be honest about that, you know. It's like, it's not like I want to be living on the fringes of music. That's not intentional. It's just kind of like who the three of us are, who I am in a musical sense. Like, that's just honestly what we're compelled to do. So it's like, you know, I don't know if you can really change that. That's kind of just what I've been, where my passions lie, I guess.
You kind of approach things with this, not ease, but there's like there's a flow where you're not trying to force anything. It comes out the way it comes out, and your expression is your expression. It's not like you're trying to get in a room with a bunch of other co-writers and to make like a pop hit, you know. It
not
seems
yet.
To be not yet. That'll be 2024. But you know, in terms of what the three of you guys in Metz have together and what you create together, yeah, I mean, that rawness, that just level of sound, that wall of noise, like, that's the thing, you know. That's what happens when Metz gets in a room together and makes music. And yeah, I wouldn't want you to change anything about that either.
Yeah, I embrace that. Like, I really embrace that now too. Like, with the three of us, just where we are, you know, in our personal lives and stuff, it's like I do look at it as this thing I feel really lucky to have. And I think you treat it like you kind of treat it in a way, I don't know, not kid gloves, you know, but like, I want to take care of it. I want to make sure that everyone is happy and that we can continue to do it as long as, you know, as long as we love it. Because you can definitely take things for granted and let things kind of get out of control. And Lord knows, in this industry, it's just hard as hell to stay afloat in any way, shape, or form, you know. So,
Totally.
You gotta love it and like love the people you do it with.
100%. So you said you're in the middle of working on more Weird Nightmare material. I think you might have mentioned that you're also working on more Metz material. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Oh yeah, I mean, so the Metz record is the furthest along. It's close, getting really close. Just a little bit of tracking left, and then mixing and mastering. So that will be the first thing that sees the light of day. And then I've just kind of started with a new batch of Weird Nightmare songs that I'm really excited about too. So things are moving, and the Noble Rot record with Graham is going to be out in like a month or something. There'll be a single from that.
Nice.
Soonish. So yeah, lots of stuff on the go. And but the Metz one is like closest to completion.
That's exciting.
Yeah, totally.
So much going on. And speaking of singles, I wanted to talk about Come On Down with Joe from Idols, which is also a fucking killer track. When did that come about exactly? Because I know that you guys toured together in 2019, and then of course the pre-pandemic, right? So like, you're with these guys, you've formed a relationship with them. When did this come about, and how did you facilitate it? Yeah, what's the background of this song?
That track was intended for Atlas Vending. It was recorded during those sessions and didn't make the record. And for me, the last thing that I do with Matt's songs is the vocal. So we never got around to it. And I was kind of, this might have been around the time when I had just done, you know, the collaborations with Alicia and Chad, and was really stoked on, and Graham, you know. It was like, I was really, after having this insular, very, very insular band in Metz for 10 years or more, we didn't, you know, we would not work dream of working with anyone else. It was like, you know, even when we did a record with Albini, that was like the first time we brought someone into the equation, really. Like,
right.
That was going to have their sonic fingerprints on it. We were very precious about it. But my take on that changed, and we were all just like, yeah, we like that track. It's a good track. And I had mapped out all the vocals and everything. I just hadn't like written the lyrics for it and everything. So it was really close. It was all there, but I didn't want to dive back into it. I wanted to keep moving forward with new stuff. And so we kind of Hail Mary'd it over to Joe, who, you know, is a guy who we, you know, it's funny. It's funny to look back on, like, years ago, Bristol, you know, Idols, no one heard of them, opening for Mets. And then they returned the favor many years later. We're opening for them, and we're playing Alexandria Palace in front of 10,000 of their adoring fans. You know, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. But, you know, they're just sweetheart guys, wonderful people. And so we chucked the song over to Joe, and he was game, and he sent us back his vocal. And we went from there. So it was like, just again, instead of saying no to the idea, just throwing it out there into the universe and seeing what happens. And I'm glad we did. I think that song, you know, made some people happy. We're proud of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love the theme of just kind of like the saying yes to things, or being open to things that you otherwise wouldn't have been maybe in the past, where creating the weird nightmare stuff and then getting your friends in on that. I like how that sort of translated to Mets territory, where you had this extra song from Atlas Vending, and you're like, well, why don't we just see what happens? Let's share it with Joe, and let's make it something that it wasn't intended to be at first, but now it just kind of takes on a whole other identity by involving other people. And it's kind of cool how doing that can kind of alter the entire feel of a track, especially one that you were kind of sitting with for a minute and weren't sure like what to do with it. And then suddenly it just became this other thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, you nailed it. It's this thing. It's like, it was a little stale for, I was like, I don't want to jump in the vocal booth. It's just been with us too long. So, and then Joe, of course, takes it from a completely different angle than I would have, and it's fresh again. And yeah, all three of us were really into that kind of idea at that point. It was like a breath of fresh air. So and, you know, just fun, like just doing fun stuff is important every now and again.
What a concept!
Yeah, right. Is music supposed to be fun?
I know, and it's funny because as I have become older myself, you know, at 43, and my motivations and sort of what I started kind of doing this whole thing for, and I believe that it's always been a coping mechanism for me as well, just in terms of the need to create this stuff, but to create a very specific sound, you know, to create a very specific point of view through music. And I think my younger, you know, angsty self was definitely came at it from a very much more like myopic vision of just like anger and sadness and emotion and all this stuff. And I think even as we become older, we're still, of course, tapping into those emotions. We're tapping into those things. But I think one thing that I realized, and this was right before the pandemic hit, when Jerome's Dream was on tour with Daughters, which was, it was an amazing tour. It was whatever, 4 or 5 weeks in Europe or something. And I came off of that tour feeling really depleted. And what I realized is that was my older self taking on sort of this mindset that I had when I was, you know, 18 or 19 years old. And I kind of reflected on that, like, during the pandemic, just as far as like my own, because this is a thing that you're supposed to be doing to like make you feel better. And for some reason, I just came off of that tour just feeling shittier. And so now I'm at a place where, you know, we still play very like loud, heavy music, but I'm trying to come at it from a place of not lightness, but you know, I want to have a certain amount of fun doing it. I mean, of course, like you said, you know, this isn't, when you say work, it's not supposed to be a chore, which it mm-hmm. never is for me either, but it's, I'm just kind of reflecting on my own relationship with this type of music, you know, like you said,
yeah.
it's like a coping mechanism, but it's also like, it brings you in a particular headspace. And I think that the headspace that I was in pre-pandemic on tour, I realized that it actually wasn't good for me. And now I have a much different, well, I think I've adjusted my relationship with it.
I think you have to.
Yeah.
I think you're a different person than you were when you started it, right? It's like, yeah. if you don't change your approach, or even what it means to, or like make sense of what it all means
right.
to you, then you can't enjoy it. Like, I know for me too, it's like when I see the guys, it's important that, like I said, that we're all in a good place and that we're excited and we're happy. And if we're not, which happens all the time, because, you know, our band is in many ways, well, it is, it's just full on is a business as well as this thing we love and feel a close connection with. So it is a sticky thing that you can absolutely get lost in the weeds, in the business of it, in the stress of it, and really start to hate it. You know,
yeah.
If you don't check yourself and remember, you know, what it is that you get from this thing, and then why you started to do it. And I mean, I can totally understand where you're coming from and how you have to be like, hold on, you know.
Like, right, and like kind of take stock of where you're at and
yeah, if I get off a tour and I hated it, you know, then maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, it was a weird one for me, where it was a real, I wouldn't call it a crossroads, but it was a thing where I was kind of confused with how I was feeling coming off of it. That, you know, a tour that was amazing, you know, it was really good shows, we hit tons of places, everything went the way it was supposed to. So then when I came back, yeah, that's when I realized, where I'm like, I need to actually make an adjustment here in terms of my relationship with this music. And, you know, and it, again, the pandemic, you want to talk about silver linings, you know, I feel like that kind of allowed me to have that space from the band and to kind of reflect on, you know, again, we were talking about this earlier, just the like why we're doing it and, yeah, what it means to you now. Yeah. Like you said, you can get lost in the weeds pretty quickly. And then suddenly you're like, what, like, I don't want to do this. Have you ever arrived to a crossroads where you were actually ready to put it all down? Or was this a thing where you've been able to kind of refine along the way and just make it kind of a part of your existence without any doubt or inclination to stop?
Yeah, it's a constant adjustment because it has to live within the bigger picture, right? Like, it's not the only part of the picture, and I have to remind myself that, you know, my wife is good at reminding me that there's a lot more than just this thing that you're sort of obsessed with. And yeah, it's balance, and I think started to be able to do a better job at that. You know, it's a day-to-day thing, and it's like a constant work in progress where trying to have a healthy balance can be really hard, and it absolutely ebbs and flows with, like, if you're on the road or if you're making a record or you're in the studio, all these things trigger different things. And so, you know, right now I can say, no, yeah, I think I'm I'm well adjusted. And then, you know, but it's different all the time.
you know, again, we talked about the just how much this stuff is a part of our identity, and how much we've realized that we kind of rely on it. Because, you know, I had a lot of time away from it before I kind of returned to it when we kind of decided to resurrect this band. You know, it's kind of crazy where now, again, I'm older, but I realize just how much a part of my identity this thing kind of supports, you know. And I don't know if that's just like a flaw of ours as like creative people, and maybe it's not even, it shouldn't be considered a flaw, you know. It's just
a trait.
It's a trait. It's just like it's just the way we are wired and the way we're built and how we exist. And
I like to think of it that way. I'm not even joking. I do think.
Yeah,
I do like to think of it that way. Is something that some people need to do this, and
like it's a necessity.
Yeah, and thank God. you know, the world would be a terrible place without art and music. And
it's so true.
Yeah,
it's so true.
I'm glad that people feel compelled to do this. And it can be a really self-serving thing, and it can also be a really selfless thing. And so
it's funny how it almost works simultaneously, right? It's like it could be deemed as self-serving, but while doing that and indulging yourself, you're creating something for someone else to also enjoy. So it's almost like focus on the creation for the sake of your needs, and not overthinking it too much, but then knowing that there's going to be other people out there who the work is going to resonate with.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, I guess that's just sort of the concept of art in general.
Yeah,
know?
I think the
you make stuff because you have to, and
the intention the intention behind, I'd say, the vast majority of artists is good. I think it is, like, people have good intentions. They want to bring something into the world that didn't exist beforehand. And I still am, like, truly amazed at that, like, at the idea of, like, making a record and then that song came out of thin air. I think it still kind of blows my mind, and I think it's important that people take that leap of faith and do those things, because unlike so many things in this world that are, you know, done for reasons of power or money or greed or whatever, I think this is a beautiful thing. And I think it's we've seen it firsthand, and it never gets old when someone says, that song helped me through a time, that song made me smile, that song I listen to when I go running, whatever. It's always awesome to hear that. It's always amazing. And amazing is the right term. It's not. You know.
It really is. And that's where, you know, you have to check in with yourself when you're the actual person who's creating this stuff. It's almost like you can't put your finger on how it's actually going to affect other people. It's like you can work with your own instincts, and you can work with, you know, the reaction of, you know, bandmates or collaborators. Like you said, when you're creating something out of thin air, and it's just like, you're just creating sound, and these sounds can have that profound of an effect on someone's life and how they feel, and even, like, you know, choices they make through how a song either motivates them or compels them to do something or go somewhere or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, I there's countless pathways, you know, but yeah.
And then it creates this cycle, because you and I, you know, and I'm assuming most people, musicians, the only reason they do it is because they fell in love with a song or an album or an artist, right? And then they got hooked on this, like, you know, contagious, this bug of music, you know, and it's, so it's just,
right,
it's this awesome
quality
thing that just keeps propelling itself. And
Yeah, it does blow my mind, and I think that's sort of what saves humanity. It's like you on the other side you have war and greed and you know, power hungry people, but then you have people who can actually just tap into their own soul and like just make and create, and those things they affect other people, and that's what I like about the sort of tie into our conversation earlier about how, you know, during the pandemic that piece of the equation was missing when you weren't able to be on the floor with people who wanted to see your band, or you weren't able to like feel that energy, you know, that real like visceral energy between a crowd who is enjoying the music you make. And yeah, that interaction itself, like you said, the importance of live music and how much you realize that it was such a huge thing that can be easily taken for granted when suddenly, you know, you realize it could be taken away from you very quickly. It's
yeah,
like really
and,
fucked
and
up.
And the power of it is like the power of a live performance of that connectivity is stunning, you know, on a special, when it works, when it's like magic, there's nothing like it. And I think we all really realized that when everyone was forced to take a step back. So, yeah, man, people, you know, go out, support local musicians, everything. It's just like this thing that will bring joy to a lot of people and hopefully just keep propelling itself and getting more people hooked on making interesting,
hooked,
cool music.
Hooked on the good shit.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and sharing this on social media. Don't forget to rate and review as well, it would mean the world to me. You can also make a donation, buy a t-shirt, or send me a note on Instagram at microspymusic. Check out all other episodes at microspymusic.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening.